Good day, podcast audience. This is your podcaster, Ken Hodge, the presidential candidate for National Postal Mail Handlers Union, Local 304, local president position. This podcast today gives me an excellent opportunity to present to you the training base or the type of training that will take place in Local 304 after you elect me as your local president. The podcast today, we're going to train on holiday schedules. And from time to time, I'm going to digress and bring it back to you to let you know that this is how training will be conducted in Local 304 for all the stewards and all the branch presidents. Holiday scheduling. Well, before we start to explain how a holiday schedule works, let's take a moment and examine the actual holidays. Now, as a reference, I'm using the Employee Labor Relations Manual 52, the Elm 52, and I'm going to read to you from Section 518, Holiday Leave. 518.1 says, observed holidays. The following 11 days are observed as holidays by the United States Postal Service. New Year's Day, January 1st. Martin Luther King's birthday, the third Monday in January. Washington's birthday, Memorial Day, newly added Juneteenth, National Independence Day. Then you have Independence Day, which is the 4th of July, Labor Day, Columbus Day, Veterans Day, Thanksgiving, and Christmas. Those are the 11 holidays that are now observed by the United States Postal Service. So now that we understand that there are 11 holidays that will be observed, I want to go back and address the newer holiday added to that list, because for years there were only 10, and then Juneteenth was added to that list. Now, on November 29th, 2021, and if we were in a training class, I would have this memo on an overhead. Oh, wow, did I date myself. This memo would be part of the projected images that you would have an opportunity to view and read. And it's a memo from Deputy Postmaster General Doug Tolino. This memo was sent out, circulated November 29th, 2021, about Juneteenth, National Independence Day. And the letter reads, the memo reads as follows. President Biden signed into law the Juneteenth National Independence Day Act on June 17th, 2021. And he sent this out in November, making June 19th a federal holiday. This new holiday commemorates the final end to slavery in the United States, and the Postal Service is fully supportive of annually observing and setting aside a day to recognize this historic event. I'm just going to read the memo as it is. I'm not going to try to explain what. Anyway, because the Postal Service is part of the nation's critical infrastructure and our customers are relying on us to deliver our essential services, we were unable to cease operations to observe Juneteenth this calendar year. Now, remember, this memo was written in November 2021. Beginning in 2022, the Postal Service will recognize the Juneteenth National Independence Day as a holiday eligible to full-time and part-time career employees. The observance will be included in the Employee and Labor Relations Manual, Elm 518, Holiday Leave, and be subject to the corresponding provisions of the section. Now, again, this is why we read 518 first. Then we follow that up with a memo from Mr. Tolino. And what I want to say to you about this memo is This memo was put in effect for eligible full-time and part-time career. It is very important that presidents and stewards understand that a part-time employee is a specific category. I know there are a lot of times where you may read that and you think, well, we're talking about full-times. Well, even though they say part-time, they're talking about MHAs. Not the case at all. There is a distinct difference between a career classification of MHA, mail handler assistant, and part-time flexible. So as per this memo, your training you will receive would advise you to know that the information we're about to share on holiday scheduling with respect to the Juneteenth holiday only extends itself to full-time regulars. Then I would make a point for us to discuss or just go over the fact that for regular employees, there are 11 holidays. Juneteenth being the 11th. If you look at our national agreement, they're only showing 10. Now, based on the memo from Mr. Tolino, unless there is subsequent documentation or an update to the memo, the MHAs still have 6 holidays. And you'll have to check and see if there was a follow-up that says MHAs will be eligible for Juneteenth, then the MHA would have 7. Minus that document, the MHAs are going to get paid for 6 holidays. So, quick recap. We understand that as per Elm 518, that we have a holiday that the post office observes. We understand as per our contracts, Article 11, that the full-time regular employee now will observe 11 holidays and the MHA will observe 6 pending an update, which may take it to 7. But as of right now, this training, they will observe 6 holidays. All right, now let's move right on from understanding the holidays to taking a look at holiday scheduling and how do we schedule for holidays. And I want to say to most postal people, to most union officials, if you've never done a holiday schedule, I understand why you don't fully understand a holiday schedule. You see, there is a major difference between you having a meeting with management to discuss holiday scheduling, or there's a difference between you having a meeting where ideas are, you know, ebb and flowed, given back and forth, as opposed to you show up at a particular time, management gives you a copy of what they're going to do, and you call that a meeting. That's not a meeting. That's not a meeting. But if you don't understand holiday scheduling, that's pretty much all that anyone could ask of you. Do you understand, and I'm talking to stewards and branch presidents, do you understand the pecking order? Do you understand the utilization of each level of employee required to work their holiday before you transition to the next level? Do you understand that makeup? Well, see, now I'm going to try and explain that to you. And if you, or not if, when you grasp that concept, watch how much more powerful, and I'm sorry, I love to use that word, watch how much more powerful your posture will become when you sit in the next meeting with management to discuss a holiday schedule. Now we're going to move back into the contract, Article 11, and we're going to talk about holiday pay. Do you know it's your responsibility as a branch president or as a steward to make sure all your members who don't have the opportunity, who don't take the opportunity to read the contract, to know you can get leave in lieu of pay. You see, the hours you work, you're going to get paid for those. But on a holiday, there's an additional 8 hours of holiday pay that's going to be due to you. It's important that you know you can choose, and I'm talking to career right now, you can choose to have that 8 hours given to you in leave hours as opposed to 8 hours of actual pay. Just something that's important that members should know, and that's right out of Article 11. And when we talk about MHAs, with respect to Article 11, Article 11.4, paragraph C, the number of hours of holiday leave pay for MHAs will be based on the following. So already they're telling you that as per Article 11, MHAs, we do a little something different with their holidays. 200 man-year offices, you can exchange 8, or you'll get paid for 8 holiday hours. Post-plan offices, 4 hours. All other offices, 6 hours. Now, it's important as a local president that I identify while I'm speaking or training branch presidents which branches are 200 man-year, which may fall into the post-plan, or understand to give you a better definition of what all the above mean, or all the rest define that a little clearer for you. But nonetheless, it's important that you understand where I'm trying to educate you from. And again, all of my references are 99% our contract in the Elm. But let's continue in Article 11, and we're going to talk about how we schedule people for work. Or, you know what, let's just take a trip right back into the Elm 518 for a second. And in the Elm 518, I'm speaking from 518.2, and it defines how we designate holidays or what day will be designated. 518.21 said, let's talk about Saturday. When a holiday falls on Saturday, the preceding Friday is observed as the holiday. Okay, pretty standard. 518.22 says, when a holiday falls on Sunday, the following Monday is observed as the holiday. So if it's a Saturday, we step back. If it's a Sunday, we step forward. But now when an employee's 518.23 says, when an employee's non-scheduled workday falls on a day observed as a holiday, the employee's scheduling workday preceding the holiday is designated as that employee's holiday. So if you have non-scheduled workdays that the holiday falls on, Sunday, Monday, Saturday, Sunday, it goes backwards. Does that make sense? On Saturday, you go back to Friday. On Sunday, you move forward to Monday. But if you're off on a Sunday, Monday, your holiday, designated holiday, goes back to Saturday. So if we were to just condense all of this, I would tell you every holiday, you're going to take the preceding, you're going to step back or move back the day behind, with the exception if the holiday is on Sunday, and that is the only time you're going to move forward. So regardless of how how confusing that might sound, if the holiday is on Sunday, you move forward. Any other time you're doing a holiday schedule, you're going to take the preceding day. You're going to move back a day. Okay? So now we understand that. We understand holiday work days. We understand how a schedule should be formatted depending on the day the holiday falls on. And again, what I'm saying to you on this podcast, trust me, when you sit in one of my training sessions, you'll understand. Again, I'm big on graphics overheads because, again, I want the training to not only penetrate your mind, but it's got to be, I believe, in visual. You know, as you see it and become excited about it, it's going to make you want to learn it more. And when I say learn it, I do mean learn it, because let me tell you, you've got a lot of folks, a lot of us have been in unions forever, and everything we know is because somebody else told us. And I'm not even going to go into what somebody else said, but everything we know, when you take the time to sit down and read and educate for yourself, you're going to be surprised that what we do as union officials, or me as a local president, we can simplify it by just better understanding it. Okay, let's get back to our holiday schedule. Now, in Columbus, Ohio, they've got this real neat little thing in their local agreement that says management will meet with them 2 weeks prior to posting the schedule. Now, I got to tell you, that's a beautiful nuance to have in a contract, but I'm pretty sure we don't even begin to tap into that. Well, they don't begin to tap into it, because let me tell you something. I'm willing to bet that that meeting goes, here's what we're going to do. The steward says, hey, can we get more people off? Management says, no, we need them. And that's how that meeting goes. And let me tell you something. That meeting only goes like that until you've had one of these training sessions. Then that meeting will go, hey, wait a minute. Before management just hands me a schedule that I'm just going to sign off on, let's sit down and talk about this. Let's go back and make sure management has scheduled people in the right order. See, there's a pecking order to holiday schedules. Now, management don't know the pecking order. And let me tell you why they don't know it, because they're just so used to scheduling la-di-da-di everybody. So now when you sit in front of management and now you present that pecking order, and let's look at, and we're going to talk about it, just the thought of a steward or the branch president saying to management, hey, let's double check the pecking order to ensure all employees were assigned properly. Now we're going to go back to our national agreement, section 11.6, article 11.6. The employer will determine the number of categories of employees needed for holiday work, and a schedule shall be posted as of 12 noon on the Tuesday preceding the service week in which the holiday falls. As many full-time and part-time regular scheduled employees as can be spared will be excused from duty on a holiday or day designated as their holiday. So that's pretty much in the mail handler contract, the deepest or the closest you're going to get to being able to tell management that they shouldn't have a full complement at work during holidays. There's language there that you might have to dig a little deeper to get out that says if you work 10 people every day on the holiday, maybe that should be 7. It shouldn't be 10, because if it's going to be the same, then there's no need to have language that addresses a holiday. And you got to understand that. So when you grasp that concept, as well as everything else we're talking about, holiday scheduling, when you grasp that concept, again, it puts you in a position to bargain better for the member and not go down that rabbit hole with management. We're short. We need to bring everybody to work. But you got to understand that. You see, this, again, has already been negotiated at the national level. And quick segue from the holiday schedule training. I'm going to tell you now, and I'll probably tell you every chance I get, if you really take our contract and work it, we don't have to add or take away anything from it, and work it, you'll find that we've got a powerful instrument that I think people have become so complacent with that they don't use it for the power that it is. That national agreement we have, if we would come in line or bring ourselves in compliance, which would make management be in compliance, I guarantee you, you'll like the job that you have. But anyway, employees shall be selected. I'm back in article, I'm back in the contract, article 11, section 11.6. Employees shall be selected to work on a holiday within each category in the following order. Here's that pecking list. First available, B1, all available and qualified part-time flexible employees, even if overtime is required. You see, now, as I introduce these articles to you, I want you to also grasp some of the language that's filling these pages. So already we're saying for holiday schedules, we want to make sure that all qualified part-time flexibles are working, even if overtime is required. So that puts me in a frame of mind as I look at the rest of Article 11. It says the post office is willing to spend a little extra money to ensure as many full-time and part-time scheduled employees can be spared. So, again, here's my mindset as we move forward. Article 11.6, B2. So, after we've got all the qualified flexies, part-time flexies, now we move down to full and part-time regular employees in order of seniority who have volunteered to work on the holiday or the day designated as their holiday. When such day is part of their regular work schedule, these employees should be paid at the applicable straight time rate. So if it's on your regular work day, not your off day, you can volunteer to work. You'll get 8 hours pay in addition to 8 hours holiday pay, which, again, you can transfer or have transferred into annual leave. B3. So, again, we got part-time flexies. We got all full-time volunteers. Now we get down to MHAs. MHAs, now, inside your contract, Article 11, it sends you from B3 to Section D. And Section D reads as follows. MHAs will be scheduled for work on a holiday or designated holiday after all full-time or part-time volunteers are scheduled to work on their holiday or designated holiday. They will be scheduled to the extent possible. Now, I got to stop right there. When they say they will be scheduled to the extent possible, I think based on what I've already read about even if overtime is needed, that says that that employee should be working. Now, again, I'm paraphrasing, and we would sit down in the council, in the local 304 council with the presidents, and we would sit down and we would come to an understanding of how we're going to move forward with what that said. And all we're talking about right now is, how are we going to interpret and how are we going to implement that phrase, they will be scheduled to the extent possible? Let that thought sit with you for a minute, because if we can't come to a common understanding there, then the rest is not going to be easy. At that point, I would propose that we accept as an understanding, to the extent possible, will mean that they will work or schedule all MHAs for a 12-hour day before they mandate or force any regular employee to report for work. So I'm going to have to bring this podcast to a close, so I'm going to give you the expedited ending. Again, once we observe that employees are scheduled within the parameters, P PTFs, volunteers, scheduled people, you know, MHAs, we may be able to show management, listen, if you understand that before you force an employee to work, you have to work that MHA 12 hours, don't you understand that that MHA can do what it is that you want to force a regular to come to work for? Does that make sense? Because let's just keep it 100 with each other. Most times you come to work on holidays, well, in Columbus, very often you get the opportunity to leave. So if you make me come to work, you draft me in, I'm going to be there for 8 hours. I mean, under most circumstances. But all I'm saying is understanding our contract, understanding the tool that we have, Article 11. We didn't get a chance to touch Article 8 because I want to talk to you about scheduling of overtime. Understanding the ELM 815. Understanding and having a better grasp of the tools in our trade will put us in a position that we will represent members to the point that they will be proud to say they are a part of Local 304. Hey, this is Kenny Hodge giving you a quick training session on what it's going to be like if you will support me and elect me as your next local president. Support the platform, a president with presence, a team with presence.